It could have been about 65, 70 years ago. I may be wrong in my, you know, in the numbers. Okay. And whoever the shatchan was between a rabbi and the town of Passaic, the shatchan told them that on this and this Shabbos, Harav Yosef Rosen is coming to town, and he's going to try out for the position of Rav HaKolel, chief rabbi of Passaic. Well, the town was aflutter with excitement, because the Rogachev is coming. Rav Yosef Rosen, everyone knows that the Rogachev's name is Rav Yosef Rosen. The Rogachev is coming to Passaic. Do you see what we are? And the man arrives, and because of the distinctive manner in which the Rogachev wore his hair, he was a Nazir, had a long, pointy beard, and he was bald, somewhat bald over here, but over here in the back, he had curlicues of hair like Samson had, and which Delilah snipped off. It's a known picture. We have many pictures of him. The man comes. This ain't the Rogachev. I mean, Rogachev don't look this way nohow. It's not the Rogachev. Erev Shabbos, they refused to allow the man to get up in the shul to darshan, to show his wares. They refused to allow it. It's a mekachtos, it's a fake, and finished. The place was on wheels over here until finally someone very sagaciously realized, hey, come on, it's Erev Shabbos. The man comes, obviously he's a Talmud Chacham. He didn't deceive anyone. It's the shatchan that you got to get. So if we'll have to go to a Din Torah, we won't do it Shabbos, all right? We'll go into New York after Shabbos. So they called the Vada Rabbanim in New York, and that's what the Vada Rabbanim told them. Look, Kabbalat Torah demands that you allow the man to show what he is, and finish. You have no responsibility whatsoever beyond that. Sunday, you'll come into New York, and we'll sit down. Let the two sides sit down, and we'll paskin what the Din Torah has got to paskin. Whether you were fooled, and who has to pay the expenses for this, and finish, that's all. The Din Torah never took place, because by the time this Rabbi Yosef Rosen went ahead and showed who he is and what he is, they settled for this Yosef Rosen, even though he wasn't the Rogachev. In fact, there are Rosh Yeshiva of the last generation in YU, who are no longer here, they've gone to their eternal rest, who came from Europe as young men to Passaic, New Jersey, to get smicha from this Rav Yosef Rosen, and then they went wherever they went. Simple as that. But he wasn't the Rogachev.
I thought you were going to say it was a relative to Paul Rosen.
No, sir. No, sir. No way.
Rogachev was a Nazir?
Rogachev, well, he practiced Nazir.
This one
looked like a Likrish Talmud Chacham.
I heard that he didn't give a sefer because he didn't want to stop learning him long enough to take his kid.
Yeah, whatever it is. Okay, well, whatever it is. I don't know.
And his name was the same.
Yosef Rosen. That's his name.
The thing I always remember, when you saw his picture, I imagine somebody today, like, going to sit in yeshiva to learn like that and saying, I'm sorry. I don't want to get my hair cut.
Throw him out of yeshiva. In 2 days, he would be summarily dismissed by the Rosh Yeshiva. Okay? Now, let me tell you something about Rabbi Yosef Rosen. I may have mentioned it somewhere. No, the Rogachev. finish. It happened to be that this Rabbi Yosef Rosen, as I say, turned out to be a formidable Talmud Chacham. Those who still remember him, remember him. No two ways about it.
Which shul in Passaic was this?
If I'm not mistaken, he was the Rav of the Chevrat Tilim. The Chevrat Tilim Shul, which no longer exists, no longer stands. It's only a bank account which does stucco work. Jack Burr is a member. Willie Shapiro administers that the funds over there. They do good work. If I'm not mistaken, it was Chevrat Tilim. And he was the one under whose auspices in the 1940s that the chapel was set up. That's got to be Orthodox. You see. And Kashrus was all under his supervision.
So they did hire the guy.
Oh, yeah. The man was okay. He was something. But he wasn't the Rogachev, Aaron. He wasn't the Rogachev. And the Shatchan promised us the Rogachev. Can you imagine that the Hasoga, the level, I don't know that it's chutzpah, but the level of self-esteem that Jews in Passaic had, that we're entitled to a Rogachev. What's there to talk about? Simple as that. Well, where else would the guy come if not Passaic? In all of America, if he's leaving Europe, if he's leaving Dvinsk and Rogachev, right? Then obviously.
More things change.
But I'm telling you, when I heard it the first time, it was, my reaction was similar to yours. I had to ask 100 questions. I just could not, and I went over and over. People told me here, the old our Kohen Gadol here, whom some of you don't know, that was Rav Shia Cohn, was the Mashgiach downtown in the hospital till he was 99 years old. He knew it. He knew that for a fact. He was here when that happened. Washaviak knew it. He was around. He was a youngster. Irving Washaviak. Irving knew it. He was a youngster when this happened. He knew it clearly. Let me tell you what the Rogachev did. The Rogachev, as I told you, was the Vilna Gaon of our century. Nothing escaped him. He only went ahead and proved in every single step of the way, in other words, every single step of his defining the terminology of halacha, that what the Rambam writes in Yad HaChazaka is identical to what he writes in the Mara Nevuchim.
This is what the Rogachev says.
Rogachev says it. Now, I've chosen a piece of the edited version of the Rogachev that Miklal Hein HaTashamei Alav, where the Rogachev disagrees with what the Rambam says in the Mara Nevuchim. He says that given the fact that the Rambam is unified in philosophy as he is in halacha, that what he writes in Mara Nevuchim is as valid in philosophy as it would be in halacha, he has a problem with the Rambam's definition of nes, of miracles. Now, if the Rogachev, now listen to this pilpul, if the Rogachev held that you have to split the Rambam in two, and what he writes in philosophy is worthless, or can be discounted, but what he writes in halacha has to be taken into consideration, so he would say that. He wouldn't disagree with him. He would say what the Rambam writes in Mara Nevuchim is false. He doesn't know what he's talking about. You've got to be guided by what the Rambam writes in Yad HaChazaka. He would simply make a palginon diburah. He would split the man into two. You do a schizophrenia on him, and that's it. Split him, and that's it. However, he writes, I disagree with the Rambam in Mara Nevuchim, and the reason that I disagree with Mara Nevuchim is ledina, is because of a certain din. And whatever the Rambam writes in philosophy has an effect and has to be congruous with dinim. There is no way to separate the two. So even though I have this unusual case where the Rogachev is disagreeing with the Rambam in his philosophical terms, it is absolute proof positive that the Vilna Gaon of our century held like Rav Kook unquestionably, and Rav Kook knew the Rogachev, that there is no way to separate this Rambam into shtikalach, into pieces. This is a totally unified personality, like a menorah that's made out of one chunk of gold. And if you do anything to that, you are doing ultimate violence and harm to truth, and ultimately to this lofty personality called the Rambam. Let's read it. Now, the sheet that you have in front of you comes from the Rogachev, the Tzofnas Panecha Breishis, and the editor of Kasha went ahead and put a lengthy introduction of about 75 pages in which he extracted from all over the manuscripts certain concepts, about 20 or 25, no, a little more, about 32 concepts that the Rogachev deals with, and this concept of Nes, the Halacha of a Nes. But let me just show you what he's going to do. When Moshe Rabbeinu, for instance, took his makel, his staff, and threw it down in Mitzrayim, it turned to what? It turned to a snake. Okay? Now, just follow me a minute. You touch a snake, is it tummy or toha? It's tummy.
Yeah.
When you pick it up, like Moshe Rabbeinu did, he is touching tuma, right?
Right.
So he became tummy at that moment. Correct? Unless you're ready to say that it wasn't a real snake. That from Nisim you don't create reality. It's only a momentary, illusory vision.
Mm-hmm.
What is it? Now, is it a halacha or isn't it a halacha? You're darn straight that you're in a halacha. At that moment, we didn't have to worry about it, Tomei or Tahar. This is before Matan Torah. But what if, assuming for a moment, someone else did the same thing? Well, Moshe Rabbeinu did the same thing afterwards. Is that staff one a staff, a mitzius, a reality that can go ahead and convey tuma? Now, this is the way the Rogachevra picks up. Let's learn it. You were going to say, Joel.
Oh, I was
going to
ask if you
picked
it because of this week's
Pashat, Sofnat Paneach. No, not at all. Sofnat Paneach, Joel is saying, means to disclose that which is hidden, to uncover that which is hidden. That was the name that Paro, in this coming Shabbos Esedra, calls Yosef. Sofnat Paneach, because of his ability with dream interpretation, you are the one who can disclose that which was hidden. And that, this is what he, you know, this is what he does. And by the way, the parish is a very interesting parish. He doesn't say anything. He says, Ayain here, take a look over here. And then he goes through in the Mishnah, in the Gemara, in Halacha, in Moreh Nevuchim, in Zohar. That's all. He just tells you, look here, 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 here. And you make heads and tails of it. Rav Kasha went ahead and created a parish where he figured it all out. And the parish on every single page is 7/8 of the page, and the original is only a couple of lines. So, you know, here's the parish.
Oh, he did all the work.
Yeah, Akasha did all the work. All the work.
Did he actually give you the quote?
He gives you the quote, and he interprets it. He puts it in context. Let's see. And this is all hidden. Let's take a look. Says Kasha, Hanes eino eruah hamit ara leinei ha'adam. Nace isn't an occurrence that just is a fleeting moment in the eyes of a human being, but it's mitziyut gemura. It is an absolute category of existence. It's reality. Hanivreit letzorach misuyam. Just that it was created for a specific purpose. Kachu mofia batorah. That's the way we see it in Torah. Umimela kol adinim ashayachim lemitziyut shayachim gamelav. Any din that can be invoked as to the existence of matter or the existence of something has to apply to something that was created al pines. Quote the Chumash, V'hine yado, Moshe Rabbeinu's hand was mitzarat kasholek. When he was told by the Rabbeinu Shalom to go and put his hand in his vest and then take it out, his hand was as white as a leper's hand. And the Rabbeinu Shalom says, put your hand back into your clothing, into your vest. Ledina, according to the din, says the Rogachevra, have a mitzius gemura. Moshe Rabbeinu had a category of what?
Tumah.
Of tumah, the tumah saras. And we have a whole halacha that we have to treat Moshe Rabbeinu with at that moment. You see.
Because
niflaot haborei, the wonders of HaKadosh Baruch Hu Yisaleh ze mitziyut gemura, is absolute reality. Ukmo gabei Miriam, the same thing with Miriam when she opened up her mouth against Moshe Rabbeinu. Dehava aleho geda mitzora mamash ledina v'hano hachinami kein. Right? And there are no two ways about it, that at that moment she had to be treated as a mitzoras. And that is why you understand HaKadosh Baruch Hu told him, since you are Tomei, put your hand into your vest, because this was Geder Tohara Mamash, because Rabbanu Shalom Paskin, that this is the way you will become Tohar in this instance. The same way I created the Tumah, I am creating the mechanics by which you're going to become Tohar and purified, Lomad Zedin, to tell you that this isn't just advice, this isn't the sleight of hand, this isn't the Ribbono Shel Olam playing magician with Moshe Rabbeinu. You've got to go through a process of Tahara. That's the din, Moshe Rabbeinu. Simple as that. Now, don't ask me, well, is that the process of Torah by every other mitzvah? Because you well know that there are certain dinim on the first Pesach, which we call Pesach Mitzrayim, that apply to only that moment, and you don't go ahead and relive those dinim in Pesach Ledoros, in the subsequent Pesach. You see. She'ilu lo hayanes mitziut Ela erua le'inei ha'adam bilvad. For if we were to argue that a nes is not reality, but it's just an illusory moment, yeshar latet al hadavar dinim hachalim rak al hamitziut. You cannot apply dinim that apply only to reality. You can't say that Moshe Rabbeinu become tahor because you just became tomei. Tahor and tomei is reality. That's a real mitzvah. If we don't assume that this nes, in this case with the hand becoming entirely infected with leprosy, so-called leprosy, if we don't assume that it's reality, then there's no reason to treat it with all the dinim of the reality of Tumas Soras. Quote, says the Rogatchova, Kol davar hanaseh al yedei neis havabriya. Anything that occurs al yedei neis is a creation, a manifestation of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Benigud l'shitas haRambam haKosev, and this is where he disagrees with the Rambam. Now, if you'll please take a look at the end of this long paragraph of what the Rambam says, there is a footnote called number 5. Mm-hmm. You see where he's quoting it from? Mor Nevuchim, Chelek Beis, Perek Choftes. So that the Rogatchova engages the Rambam in his totality. It doesn't matter where the Rambam writes this. And he is taking exception to the fact that he doesn't understand the Rambam in Mor Nevuchim, given this definition, that Nes is a Metzius. And because it's a Metzius, I apply all kinds of dinim in halacha to it. So yeah, you have a kasha on the Rambam. You know, do you know what when we say I have a kasha on the Rambam? Bruce, you know when we say I have a kasha on the Rambam? When you sit in yeshiva and kollel and you learn the Rambam in Yad HaChazaka in halacha. Here comes the Rogatchova. What?
Do they learn that?
Yes, 100%. Here comes the Rogatchova. Oh, what's there to talk about? Sure, 100%. But not Mor Nevuchim. Here comes the Rogatchova and is playing yeshiva on the Rambam's Mor Nevuchim. I have a kasha on the Rambam from Mor Nevuchim. Tell me, if he didn't hold from the Rambam, would he have a kasha on the Rambam? No, you completely discount it and finish. Now, what am I going to do? Here I am, the cockroach that I am, sitting in front of you, and I'm telling you that this door is Vilna Gaon, held from the Rambam's Mor Nevuchim. I should disagree. Maybe you can. I can't.
Do you feel like...
Wait a minute, he's been quiet.
I'm sorry.
He's been quiet.
You know, maybe it's because I majored in philosophy in college. Maybe that's the reason for my impatience.
Go ahead.
My feeling is the question that we're dealing with, or the opinion that we're trying to give a retort to, is not worth answering.
Which is what
all of this time spent, again, is not worthwhile, because if you're talking about MS and truth, and you cannot simply stop thinking at a certain point simply because you have a new category for an area of thought. You know, it's a label, philosophy. Mm-hmm. That's all it is, it's a label.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact is, if the inquiring mind can't turn itself off, mm-hmm. This is a given in academia, in the United States, in the world of learning, and I would assume that it should be an assumption in the learning of Torah. You're going to tell me that Torah is MS, and that the two are almost identical. Then you can't stop thinking. Why should you turn your mind off simply because you come to something called philosophy?
Oh, that's very simple.
It doesn't make any sense to me.
That's very simple. Because Moshe Emes, Toroso Emes, and if you're going to bring me Aristotle by definition, it is Sheker. And I'm not going to take Sheker and superimpose it, or even bring it near the precincts of Emes. This is what becomes offensive. That in order for my Torah to be Emes, I must delegitimize everyone else's and make it Sheker.
Excuse me.
You're excused.
I can't talk about words and the meaning of words?
No, you can't.
And the syntactic relationship.
No, you can't.
Words,
it's schmutz.
The semantic dimension of
it's
words?
It's schmutz. It's theology. And that's, they were Ovdei Avodah Zarah. And you can't bring that into the Kedusha of the Dalet Amos Shel Halacha.
I don't think necessarily. I mean, I think to see this is
not worth responding to.
Right. To see this is so. Would you bring a kasha on astronomy from Ptolemy? You know, I mean, I'm saying if you see something.
But I don't have. But again, you know, we use the word philosophy, and now for some reason somebody's identifying philosophy with Aristotle. You got 2,000 years of development there.
Mm-hmm.
But
you have a whole world out there consisting of physicists and mathematicians mm-hmm. and historians and ethicists.
What are you talking about? No.
Philosophy.
But now
you're going to identify philosophy, whatever that means, because it's so broad, with Aristotle?
But that's because
not to belittle Aristotle mm-hmm. and in all of his greatness, his encyclopedic greatness.
But it's no more parallel than today. When you talk about psychology, you talk
philosophy.
You know, no. I'm making an
just
analogy.
Switched.
No, make an analogy.
Yeah.
I'm saying today when you talk about psychology, when you talk about the human mind, you talk about Freud. You know, that's identified with psychology. I mean, there may be different
on a elementary level.
No, but what?
It's not true. Freud is 50 years ago. Anybody in the field has gone beyond that.
Yeah, but they also went. I mean, they also used
way beyond it.
Yeah, but you'll come back to a basic reference of Freud as the fundamental.
Yeah, but you can't do that with Aristotle today in philosophy.
But it doesn't matter. It's the model that he's using in terms of his work, in terms of his world, and in terms of his Weltanschauung. That was philosophy. To see an identification between philosophy, between Aristotle and Halacha, is to see an identification between philosophy and Halacha, because that's his philosophy. You understand what I'm saying?
Philosophy is just a broad label.
No, it's just a method.
It's a label for a broad area of thought that can't necessarily be pinned down to physics, chemistry, electronics, biology, history, linguistic analysis.
Okay, that's you, the...
It's a broad cross-section of thinking.
That's you, the one who has studied philosophy, talking. The one who hasn't studied philosophy...
Their critical attitude isn't worth dealing with because it's unlettered. It's ignorant. It's just ignorance. Why should I spend an hour dealing with ignorance? Let them come and learn philosophy. They don't want to learn philosophy, so I don't have to talk to them about it. Simple.
All right.
I don't have time. I have to get down to business now and learn the Rambam, learn the Mar Nebuchadnezzar and Yehuda Halevi. And you'll pardon me, Eliezer Berkowitz and Schubert Spear.
I don't have to pardon you. Others may have to pardon you. I have no problems.
But, I get on with the business of learning things. Why should I keep refuting people who can't open a book and open their minds and see what's going on?
Well, maybe because of the Tinoko Shenishbu Levein Ha'akum, because those who have been ensnared by very vocal individuals to think that, God, you don't want your child to learn this garbage. That Kedusha and Tahara can only be filtered through our filtering mechanism, and we're the only ones who know what Kedusha and Tahara is, and that is, that is totally Torah. No other extraneous matter. You see. Simple as that. The extraneous matter to the Rambam, as was to the Vilna Gaon, as was to Rav Kook, was not extraneous. There was no way to know the basic terminology of Torah without it.
People who don't want to venture into this area, even if they're listening to this tape, they'll say, "Well, we're not as great as the Rogachover.
Okay. Yeah. Well, that's a cop out.
And therefore he could delve into the Rambam, but who are we? And therefore
correct. Yeah. No, that is a cop-out that has been used for centuries.
Okay.
You know what they said about the Vilna Gaon? Vilna Gaon. Only if you want, you will become a Gaon. Vilna Gaon. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Vilna. If you'd only want the one, then you become the Gaon like the Vilna Gaon. Okay? Now, listen to me carefully. What you're saying is profound. This is one of the most important cop-outs that a human being uses for anything and everything. I can't. What do you want from me? I can't. I'm going to fly. I'm not a bird. I can't. The same way here. I'm not a Rambam. I got to protect myself. I can't. Simple as that. Now, this, this has been developed by generations to say, I don't want to infect myself or infest the Kedusha that I have, whether it's for my children or anyone else, with this nonsense. A Rambam? Fine, a Rambam can go ahead and learn Rambam. And learn more in Nevuchim, and write more in Nevuchim. Not me. I'm not.
I think if you want to pursue this topic, let's say in a Jewish context, a fruitful way may be to spend a few sessions on the disputations between the Rosh and the
Rambam.
No, the Rosh, and who was his contemporary in Spain?
The Rif.
Well, no. The Rash. The Rashbah.
Yeah, over what?
Over philosophy.
Ah. So, but you understand the Rosh and the Rashba, this is all a spin-off of the Maimonidean controversy.
Okay. But so here you have focused two points of view by two competent authorities.
Okay.
And it might be interesting. I mean, I don't know where the debate took place and what literature.
Oh, that's no problem.
According to Rabbi Wein, they came to a compromise that you couldn't learn philosophy till the age of 25.
Yeah, you know what the compromise? You know what that compromise says? Just be ready for the study. Just readiness, which is simple education, which is pedagogy to me.
Yeah, but he implied the Rosh wasn't totally happy with that.
Yeah, you 100%. I can show you other parallels where this occurred. It wasn't over the Rambam. Over the Rambam.
The one that had the same.
Zohar had it, and then when Renaissance Italy, when Jews moved out of Germany, which was the Rosh's haven, and then the Rashi and the Baalei Tosfos tradition, who knew nothing of this, refused to accept and acknowledge so-called secular learning or other learning besides the Torah, when Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yosef Cologne came to, from Cologne, which is Franco-Germany, came to Renaissance Italy. There was hell on earth. Because people, the Levitas family, were teaching Torah and philosophy in the universities of Rome and Venice. To Goyim! To Goyim! And Ramari Cologne came and then he made such a churban. Earthquakes couldn't make such churbanas. You see. And the issue was nothing more than what you're talking about. The same issue as the Rashba and the Rosh.
Yeah, but I also see from your words that really the issue expands from philosophy, which is already undefined in a very wide term, to really all of secular knowledge.
All of knowledge that is not taught as Torah in the manner in which we are teaching it. That's it. Now that is, I'm choosing my words very carefully. Every generation determines what is Torah. It determines what is Torah and the manner in which it's going to teach Torah. any deviation from that manner, which is style, which is not the essence of Torah, but the style of Torah, mm-hmm. is going to be considered non-Torah. I'll give you a very simple example. Several years ago at the Torah Masorah Convention, the rabbinic board decided that a brachas be to take Hilchos brachas and to make it into a contest like a spelling bee is definitely anti-Torah. And principals who needed the so-called gimmick to be able to motivate their children to learn brachos and become proficient in brachos cried, as a man who cried, "What are you doing to me and to my community?" At that time he was in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. "I finally am capable of getting children to come home with brachas and make their parents crazy to sit down and finally say hamotzi and to bench, and which bracha do we say on that?" And parents have been ensnared in this gimmick to prepare their kids to be number one in the contest. And you are taking this away from me? I can't go against you. Elama, what's the answer? The answer is, not only is Torah of every generation defined as what is Torah to be, the essence, but also the style. Also the style. Interested in the second one? I just heard this over the weekend. In Cleveland, you know that there was one Hebrew academy for umpteen years under the leadership of the son of the immortal Rav Dessler, the Michtav Meliyahu's son, mm-hmm. and had hundreds and hundreds of Talmidim. Always the Chinuch was under the supervision of the Telzer Rosh Yeshiva, and the Morim and the Morot, the teachers, were always from the Yeshiva community. There was never a problem with anything other than...
Was it a yeshiva type school or a day school? It was a day school.
Hebrew Academy of Cleveland, the day school. But clearly in the yeshivish world, because that's the way it was, that was a wedding between the community and the yeshiva. Hmm. Okay? Until New York moved out to Cleveland. Certain manifestations occurred. One, a very early manifestation was... they wanted the mikveh to be used on Shabbos because they were chassidish guys, young guys, and the Rosh Yeshiva slapped a lock on the mikveh and said he's ready to close the mikveh and the whole yeshiva in Lita, Lithuanians, in other words, mitznadim do not use a mikveh on Shabbos. That is the men we're talking about. You want to be chassidim, go to the chassidish yeshivas. That was the early manifestation. But come to the teaching of Torah, which came a little later. There was a movement to start a cheder school. Rosh Yeshiva Paskin, though. The straw that broke the camel's back when they did open up the cheder was the following allegation. A child comes home, early elementary education. Child comes home. They saw, what did you learn today, Tatala? We saw a movie, a baby being born. I didn't yet find out whether it was kindergarten or first grade or nursery, but it was that young age. The town was ready to split apart, it seems. Meetings and meetings, till finally someone decided to call the principal of Rav Dessler in, and Rav Dessler got a hold of the teacher. And the teacher simply was asked, "What did you show? How do you do this sneeze and everything?" They seemingly showed on public television a segment of a little chick being hatched, the baby chick being born. Now, what is being said here, and it was outrightly said, I don't want my child have to learn on television. Because I don't want them to see television. I don't want audiovisual aids. This is not the way you teach Torah. And ultimately, it was a straw that broke the camel's back that got them to defy the Rosh Yeshiva and open up their own... The person who told it to me said, and by the way, the Yeshiva Katana, in other words, the day school, was never happier. They have 900 students, And the 200-300 students that went to the other yeshiva, who needed them? Because there was nothing good that you could have done in the day school, because after all, it's a day school, and everyone's happy and finished. But I'm not interested in that. I'm interested in the process.
All right, but that also shows...
And it's the style.
That also shows that when people are not ready to accept something, mm-hmm. there's no way you can impose your authority upon them.
Yeah.
And therefore... You know, until such time, there has to exist, it appears that there has to exist the coexistence, so to speak, of subdivisions of the Jewish community.
I don't want to bring this into the realm.
And listening to a tape like this is not going to change somebody's
thinking. Yeah, but I don't want to get into the realm of the political implications here. I'm only talking about the style of Torah. That style of
Torah.
There
may be many styles of Torah. Several styles.
Well, I hear what you're saying.
Yes. Spanish Jewry versus
I hear what you're saying. So, which leads me to open up to the question, why do certain people completely repudiate what we call secular learning? And why do others look for it? I'm using the model of Rav Kook. Rav Kook saw that all learning and all pursuing of the truth, if done in a truthful manner, is b'chol drach echod da'ehu, is a mitzvah of the ahavta es Hashem elokecho, b'chol levavecho, b'chol nafshecho, b'chol miyadecho. This is Yediyas Hashem.
Well, there's another way to do it. Kulam b'chachma asita, right? So, then if that's the case, I want to know what you did, Ribbono Shel Olam. I want to start investigating the chachma and see what's going on.
Very good. So sit down and learn Zohar. Sit down and learn Gemara.
I want to know...
I'm not interested in physics.
I want to know how the sun came around to be and what it is.
Right,
is this a creation of Hashem?
Take a look in the Ramban on Chumash. Simple as that. See, this is the answer. Now, the answer is not wrong, but the answer bespeaks a certain attitude, and you have to investigate it. You know, when you get a little jumpy with me when I start with the psychology business already, you know, it's because you're not ready to accept it. You're just mamish not ready to accept it. I maintain, and I will maintain until you give me data to the contrary, that the person's psychological gestalt and makeup determines how you want to learn Torah.
Okay, but you're still not going to change them.
I'm not interested in change. I'm here for information here.
All right.
I'm talking to myself. If you listen and someone else wants to listen, go listen.
And the yeshiva world, when they learn the Rambam, is Yad HaChazaka, when they say, what does the Rambam say?
Only Yad HaChazaka. Only Halacha.
Are they definitely against Moreh Ruchim?
In today's yeshiva world, 100%.
You would against it.
100%. Go into any... Did you in the years that you were in Chaim Berlin, do you recall ever seeing a Moreh Nevuchim? You may have seen a Kuzari. Maybe one copy of your Rabbi Yehuda Halevi's Kuzari. Right, you didn't see a Moreh Nevuchim.
I mean, you never...
Go into any yeshiva today, wherever you want.
If you walked into the yeshiva here and, you know, sit down and start to learn Moreh Nevuchim, I mean, would they sort of ask you, you know, like, you know, moving around?
To leave, I don't know, but would they look at you askance? Well, knowing you, Joel, I don't think that. You know, maybe one of the other Bacharim, so you understand. I don't know, but surely it would perk up the eyebrows.
This has nothing to do with this, but is there any a publication of all the Svarim HaChitzonim in one volume or no such a thing?
Yes, published by Avram Kahana. Yes.
All this
from
Chesed.
Chesed
means apocrypha. Means just
Chesed. Apocrypha. Yeah. Apocrypha. Yeah, one volume.
What do you bring out?
Available.
No, because we're talking about in general. I mean, is this considered to be a? I mean, if someone learns the apocrypha, is this considered to be a? I'm tarnished. I mean, what is the concept of learning?
If you'll turn back the hands of times to the days of Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Akiva insisted that in his door, if you learn the Apocrypha, these foreign chitzonim, you're an apikoros. But that was in that day. And today, these foreign chitzonim, the Apocrypha, are the science books, our philosophy books, our theology books.
But now, if you sit down in the Yeshiva and start to learn Ben Sira, I think people would also look at you. Ben Sira is one of the early apocryphal works. It's called, it's also in Rashi calls Ben Sira in his parish on Nangamar. That's all. Rashi learned Ben Sira.
Rashi knew how to learn Ben Sira, not me. You? We're not even talking about. You understand? There's not even. I never saw
a volume of the Apocrypha.
I'll give it to you if you won't sleep tonight. I'll give you my copy. You can finish. I guarantee
it's not
you.
In Hebrew, though. The original is in
the originals were right? The originals were in other languages, Aramaic and Greek.
But they've been translated into Greek and translated into Hebrew.
100%. 100%.
Sefer HaMakkabim is in the Apocrypha.
Yeah, sure. Okay. Now, but I hope you, if I bored you with this, it's because of because you're beyond this. But the knowledge that a Rogachover, who is a Vilna Gaon, will take you in his parish and say, look at the Gemara Nedarim, this and this page. Look into the Rambam's Yad HaChazaka. And then look into Mora Nebuchim, and this is one total unified whole. This is Rav Kook. This is the Rogachov. Okay. Now, if you from the bottom of page 36, if you count up, without learning the Rambam and Mora Nebuchim for a moment, Shitas Rambam, count up 2, 4, 6, 7 lines. Shitas Rambam he. Rambam's opinion is Shenes hu irua shel davar velo chidush davar. Nes is a happening and not a new creation. And if it's a happening, it means it passes after it's done. Finished. It doesn't have any dinim of metzius, like in the case of Tuma. It's gone. It's finished. You can't say that there was Tuma and Tara there. V'amnam Rabbeinu notekan mishitas Rambam. And the Rogachover indeed disagrees with the Rambam over here, over the issue of Nes. And look, and my point is to show you Vikotev, and look how he writes. You've got to be medayik in every word. Me'od yesh la'arich begeder divrei Rambam b'mor ha'nevuchim parakoftes. There is much that has to be written in a very exacting way to understand what the Rambam is saying in Mora Nevuchim, chapter 29 of the second part. The Ein Devarav Nechonim Bazel Edina, because what he says in Mora Nevuchim does not jive with what the din will be. Rak Zehavi Metzius Gemura Gabe Nes, that when there is a Nes, such as the ones that we discuss, this is reality. It's real in the physical world. Avalav Dil Kshafim, and sleight of the hand, magic, is totally different. Dezerak dimyon ba'alma. This is nothing more than illusory. This is fake. This is bluff. It's not reality. When a magician pulls a rabbit out of the hat, it's dimyon. It's fake. It's not real. All right, the rabbit is real, but that he hid the rabbit or whatever he did, or if he cuts off someone's head, the head is not. It's not real. You understand? It's illusion. It's dimyon. He makes you think as if. That's kshofim, that's maasek kshofim. So my point in these 2.5 lines is to show you that the Rogachover took so seriously everything that the Rambam said in Mora Nebuchim as to go ahead and disagree with him because it didn't jive with the halachic implications of the philosophy, which is identical to the shita of and the approach of our Rav Kook over here. But there are no two ways. You cannot disagree with the Rambam's philosophy, even though Aristotle may have become an anachronism, as it impacts on Torah. And this is the issue. As it impacts on Torah, if he writes it in Mora Nevuchim, it is just as compelling as if he writes it in the Yad HaChazaka. which is a very, to say the least, a very unique position.
It's very interesting what he says, the last two lines.
Yeah, all good.
Kochos Akshofim.
Kochos Akshofim, he says, the power of magic, einam boreim davar, doesn't create anything, ela poalim irua dome limitziut, it's a fake. It's artificial, it seems as if it exists. Ach lo mitziyut atzma. But there's no reality here. Ulam neis hu mitziyut lasha'ah. And when the neis occurs, when Moshe Rabbeinu's hand was mitzaras, kasheleg was as white as a leper's, at that moment you had leprosy. It's not kishuv. When Moshe Rabbeinu took the stick and threw it down, to take the analogy a little further, and picked up a snake, it wasn't ma'aseh kishuv. That was a snake at that moment. You see, and the purpose that he puts forth here is to be able to indicate to you that we have a totality and a unity of thought, which is its halachic aspect as well as the philosophical aspect. What difference does it make if the nest was real or if it was illusory? It makes a difference, because I want to know, is Moshe Rabbeinu Tomei Tumas Saras, and therefore has to go through a process of purification, of Tahara? He says, the Chumash shows you the Tahara, the purification, is bury your hand once again in your vest, put it into your bosom, and take it out, and look, you'll see, it's Tahar. The same way I made you Tomei and made you a Mitzara, you are a leper and you have Dinim of Tumah, now I take you and tell you, put it back in again, and you are clean.
But they say magician,
yeah,
is not really as a real thing. It's not.
If it were magic, then
magic, it's nothing. It's nothing in there. Yeah. There's nothing. No value to it. That's but unless it's actually there is something there.
Okay. Now, since Jerry, you tell me that this is all kids' play, because what's it to talk about? If you know MS, it doesn't matter where MS comes from. Then I'll tell you, I won't come back to this, because we've touched on the two essays of Rav Kook concerning the Rambam. You see. You are right, as I had indicated to you before, that no matter what we say here, those who don't want to be convinced will not be convinced.
Right.
That's not our point.
Now we have to sit down and learn the Mishnah Torah.
Now we've got to learn the Rambam. No, it's another shear and go learn the Rambam.
But if
you're down to business.
Look, if Rashi could say that the Torah starts that way, you know, if they bring an argument as to why the Jews are not robbers.
Rashi says that
the Jews are not robbers.
Okay.
To prove the Jews are not robbing from the Goyim.
So what are we saying?
Rashi says, we're going to bring you an argument here that the Jews are not robbing from the Goyim.
Yeah.
So who's he trying to convince? The Goyim, obviously, are not going to read Rashi's payroll. They're not going to know. He's the ones he wants to convince of the Jews. That the Jews should know vis-a-vis the Goyim.
Right, so once I'm convinced he can stop talking, we can sit and learn the Rambam now.
Right. You've got to learn the Peirush. And it's the same thing here. You learn the Peirush to understand, to define your own position. Here's a question, that's a side question here. Is this thing about Ness, is this the opposite of what, like, the Briskus hold about Hanukkah? So one of the reasons we have 8 days is because it couldn't be... The nest couldn't produce the oil, because then you wouldn't be lighting from Shemin Zion. You'd be lighting from Shemin Nest. Is this the opposite of this position about nest, that it's a mitzvah?
Seemingly, yes.
So then we pass from one to another more in the movement.
Okay. Yes. And that's what the Rogachev is questioning.
Now that
you're already paskening like the Rambam and the Moreh Nevuchim, now let's take a look at certain other cases. It just don't work. It doesn't work.
You said the ness of the oil. No, they ask. If there was enough oil to last for one day, and the first day was no S.
Was that a mess?
So I'm saying one of the answers.
No, there are 100 answers.
So I'm saying one of the answers.
So one day there's no S. What's the big deal?
Yeah, so I'm saying one of the answers is one of the answers from the Brisker Rav. The Brisker Rav is that it there was a nest the first day, because if there wasn't a little bit of oil to be left over, then you would have, on the second day, you would have Shemen Nes. You wouldn't have Shemen Zayat, and you can only light the menorah from Shemen Zayat, not from Shemen Nes. So that's what I was asking here. Is this the opposite of that? That in other words, you have a nest that's created in the oil, it would be exactly like Shemen Zayat.
Yeah, so. It's unquestionably the same trend of thought as the Rambam, unquestionably. You see, but Jerry, just to finish off this conversation on this point.
I mean, I understand the sociological problem, but
yeah, I hear what you're saying. But
it doesn't
interest
me beyond that.
I'm not so sure that it doesn't interest me beyond that. I want to tell you a klal, a rule by all people. There is no human being who wants to feel that his inferiority will be disclosed to the world. We all have imperfections,
okay.
But I don't want it spelled out. I don't need it broadcast. You understand what I'm saying? I'll live with it myself. One way that people feel inferior in the scholastic world is when someone starts to quote statistics and quote information, yeah, and rattles it off, and you suddenly, hey, this guy knows more than me. If he knows more than me, I better shut up, because I may open up my mouth and emerge like a jackass. You see?
Yeah.
And very often what we do find in the world that doesn't want to accept this unity is that person will start quoting all kinds of Gemaras. You're not allowed to study this, and you're not allowed to study that, and there's an Isser on this, and in this generation they did that, and in the Machlokas between the Rosh and the Rosh, but the Rosh wasn't satisfied, and the Rosh is a big Talmud, and somehow it fires off in a salvo of information as if it were bullet writing, like a computer. You become intimidated by it. I'm not ready to be intimidated by that fact. Like, as I related earlier, after the debate where all of the arguments of Rav Kook were presented in this 11th grade in the girls' high school, someone goes ahead, needless to say, of far greater scholarship than the girls, and is ready to say, I have an answer for every single one of Rav Kook's arguments. And now, by association, anything that the Ogeshava said. You see, I'm not ready to kowtow to that. I'm not so sure that there are answers to that. You can disagree, but don't tell me, therefore, I am wrong. Because I have two people like this, in the first half of the 20th century, Rav Kook on one hand, and Ogeshava on the other hand, that you cannot beat in any generation.
But that seems to me a sense to me. I mean, that's part of the Mechama, it seems to me.
Milchamta Shaltara, I hear.
To say, you know, I have an answer to that. What's the answer to that?
I like that. I like what you're saying. But I don't want to be intimidated just because you disagree with me. And if your beard is blacker than mine, or your Gemara is bigger than mine, does not make me inferior to you. Simple as that. Or, if I learn in an institution where they have audiovisual aids, or they tape, my shiurim, or they let me listen to a shiur on videotape, that is no less Torah than the Torah that you sit in the base medrash with 400 people, you know, crammed together like sardines.
Yeah, but there are sheikhs using the, you know.
No, I'm using this only by
way. Yeah, but I mean, so I'm saying, if you for him to say, that seems to be fair, I say, okay, so, I mean, I'll bring your eyes, so now you look at the right.
You look at the
right. Good right, it's a bad right.
Gotcha.
Is this, you know?
No two ways about it. I definitely agree. I definitely agree with that, but I fear what happens in the street is a sense of intimidation, and you see that intimidation goes way beyond that. The Milchamta Shotara. Oh, you use this brand of color?
Yeah.
Oh no, I'm sorry. and it's the same
color
of Israel. Yeah,
it's already the color of Israel.
What? Must I repeat myself again? I don't know if I had it on tape. Leah's cousin had a child, and the father of the baby learned with me together in the Beis Medrash and by Rav Moshe. So Rav Moshe was at the Bris, he was a Sandek, and
we sat at the same table, Rav Moshe, I, the father, and a couple of others from the family. I mean, that was the head table, and since I was family and a Talmud, so I sat at the head table with Rav Moshe. There were two bottles of Chalav Yisrael, two different brands, on the, you know, my famous incident, on the table. He goes to one and looks at it and puts it down, goes to the second one, looks at it and puts it down, and then goes back to the first. And he takes the first, Rav Moshe. And someone, no doubt about it, a very formidable Talmud Chacham, studying every movement of the Rosh Yeshiva, asks him, Rebbe, did you just paskin that this second brand is not to your liking, and that's why you went back to the first brand, and that we should only use the first brand of Chol of Yisrael, not the second? And he said to him, no, that wasn't my case. I just saw that this one was started, and this one wasn't started, so I went back to the started one, and I used the started bottle. So,
but you see, already jumping already.
The sense of intimidation already, that, you know, this is the point. All right? Or, you know, but you understand, it's sick when you understand it. As a doctor understands sickness, you take it seriously. You try to treat it.
Yeah,
understand? Or you try to prevent the sickness in you, which is probably what, you know,
listen,
what I'm saying.
What is the big thing? You go to Yerushalayim. And what do all the hotels advertise as to try to attract their clientele? We serve glot from New York. What is the biggest thing? What
glot from New York. New York.
That's how they attract their customers.
Look, yeah, but
the hotels are in such competition today, you wish align, the 5-star hotels.
Yes.
That's how they
get, yeah, but that's part of
the from crowd. We serve
is no one.
Yeah, but that's part where, no, but that's part of the Israeli. That's part of the Israeli shtick to begin with. They must have American pizza.
You know why? You know why they say, you know, they say guys from New York. Because Eretz Yisrael is very, very few shchitas. Not too much shchita there. Most of the meat that Eretz Yisrael are
shipped
from Argentina.
Imported.
From Argentina, which is frozen as soon as they kill it.
Yeah.
So it's not. It's not, they don't machshir the behemoth. So they don't, you know, so they, but there is a psak from that if once it's frozen, so it's not on gels, okay, apparently. So you can kasher it after the 3 days. Okay, but the real, the former wouldn't bother with this kind of psak. I mean, how can you do that? I mean, you got to kasher it within the 3 days. So if it's a lad from New York, I assume then it must be already kosher within the 3 days, because there's very, very, very little shchita in Eretz.
That's the funniest. I mean, you were sitting in Yerushalayim, we serve glot from New York.
No, that's if you saw it.
Let's prepare for 20 days from now when Emir Tzashem will learn a shir in the Rambam.
Okay.
The way Rav Kook would learn. All right. Whether we'll learn that shir with Moreh Nevuchim or not, I don't know. But we'll yet see. Have a happy Tov Chanukah to whatever is left.